Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Steve Austin Show is brought to you free today by our friends at betonline.ag. Hey guys, it's November, and for all you football fans, the playoffs are just around the corner. And when you add in everything going on in the NBA, NHL, and MMA, the sports betting action is hotter than it's ever been. Get in the mix at betonline.ag and use the promo code PODCAST1 for your 50% welcome bonus. Betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts and exclusive partner of Podcast One Sportsnet.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He started in a small town in Texas. Worked his ass off to become one of the most famous wrestlers of all time.
We're going to take care of business tonight, and that's the bottom line.
And now, he's dominating the world of on-demand audio.
And he's doing it for the working man.
This is a damn good outlet for me to spew the bullshit off my brain.
Yeah!
This is Steve Austin, Unleashed.
Hey, welcome to another classic episode of the Steve Austin Show. Every week, we are bringing out some of the most requested episodes of the podcast from behind the archives. We have another great one for you this week, and here's my producer, Sean, to tell you all about it.
What's good, everybody? It's producer Sean with yet another classic episode of the Steve Austin Show. It is episode number 306 with Roy Hibbert. Roy Hibbert is a retired NBA star who is currently working with the 76ers in Philadelphia for some talent liaison stuff. He had a pretty lengthy NBA career in this century. He started out playing for the Indiana Pacers, moved on to the Los Angeles Lakers, and also for the New Orleans Hornets and the Denver Nuggets. And a few months after this interview, he left the Lakers to go to the Hornets. Get to talk about that here on this podcast with Steve and Roy, talking about the NBA schedule, how physically taxing it could be, as well as NBA trash talk. Get to hear Roy's perspective from the court, as well as some discussion about MMA, some paintball, WrestleMania 30, which happened a year before this. Or actually, no, 2 years before it. Yeah. Even some nap science, which I found to be very interesting. You'll learn from Roy what he learned, the best time to take a nap during the day. Hope you guys dig Roy Hibbert on this classic episode of the Steve Austin Show. All right. Today, in this day in Steve Austin history, today being November 14th, we start off in 1992 in St. Petersburg, Florida. Steve Austin defeated Ricky Steamboat. Then we move on to 1993 in Orlando, Florida. We have two events happening sort of at the same time. There was an airing of the WCW main event program, which saw Steve Austin versus Charlie Norris. I don't know who won that match, but let's say Steve did. And then at the WCW Worldwide tapings in Orlando, Florida, we had the WCW International World Champion. Yeah, remember that? Rick Rude versus WCW US Champion, stunning Steve Austin with Colonel Robert Parker in his corner, wrestling Dustin Rhodes and Brian Pillman to a no contest. Things broke down in the match after Colonel Robert Parker interfered, prompting Brian Pillman to drag him into the ring and eventually chasing him backstage. So that kind of just ended everything. And then 1994 in Sarasota, Florida, we have WCW US Champion Hacksaw Jim Duggan versus stunning Steve Austin. Again, I don't know who won that match. Probably going to say Hacksaw won via DQ. I don't know the result for certain, but given how some of these matches were for Steve and Hacksaw at the time, either a DQ finish or Hacksaw going over. 1997, we finally get to the WWF here today in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. We see Dude Love defeat Savio Vega in a no-holds-barred match after Steve Austin interfered. Steve Austin hit everyone with a stunner and eventually put Dude Love on top for the cover and counted the pinfall himself, because why not? Then we go to 1999, Detroit, Michigan, for WWF Survivor Series 1999. This is a big one. We start off with Sunday Night Heat, with WWF World Champion Triple H calling out The Rock and Steve Austin, because, of course, there is a triple threat match to happen in the main event of Survivor Series 1999, and The Rock eventually chased off X-Pac and Road Dogg from ringside, while our dude, Steve Austin, cleared Triple H from the ring. Then we start off the pay-per-view, and we have Triple H interrupting a backstage interview with Steve Austin, with Austin chasing Triple H into the parking lot, where he was hit by a car. This is the pay-per-view where Steve, or the stuntman, got hit by a car, and Steve Austin was out for pretty much the entire year to get his next surgery, returning in 2000, as we'll talk about in just a second here. I don't remember watching this pay-per-view live, but this is a detail that I found interesting. In the main event, Vince McMahon, who was scheduled to be their guest referee, was unable to be in the match because he was at the hospital with Steve Austin, came out and hit Triple H in the face with the world title belt, which led to the Big Show replacing Steve Austin, pinning Triple H with a choke slam. I didn't recall the finish of that match, but yeah, that's how it happened. And then finally, wrap up in 2000 in Indianapolis, Indiana, for a WWF SmackDown taping, we have Stone Cold Steve Austin defeating WWF Intercontinental Champion Eddie Guerrero with a Stone Cold Stunner in a non-title match. I believe they wrestled again in 2002. At least that was the plan around that time. But yeah, that's a rare match I did not know happened on SmackDown. Stone Cold and Eddie Guerrero. As of the day that I taped this, it is the anniversary of Eddie Guerrero's passing. So yeah, RIP to one of the greatest, Eddie Guerrero. Well, that's it for this day in Steve Austin history. I get my information from the history of WWE.com. And thank you for supporting the Steve Austin podcast here on Podcast One. Please rate, review, and subscribe, and tell your friends. Myself and Steve would greatly appreciate that. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back with NBA star Roy Hibbert on a classic episode of the Steve Austin Show.
NFL, MMA, NBA action, all of it continues to heat up this week with games you're not going to want to miss out on. And for the kids here, it's all about college football on Saturdays. Here's what's going down this weekend. Indiana Hoosiers taking on Penn State. Minnesota facing Iowa. Wisconsin versus Nebraska, and the surprising Memphis Tigers up against Houston. Visit our good friends and exclusive partners at Podcast One, betonline.ag, to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code Podcast1. Again, that's betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts and exclusive partners of Podcast One Sportsnet.
This is Steve Austin, Unleashed.
We're rolling sound right now. Senator Roy Hibbert, center for the Los Angeles Lakers. And Roy, welcome. I call this 316 Gimmick Street. That's not the actual address, but that's what I refer to it as. Welcome to the crib.
Well, thank you for having me. Big fan.
Hey, you were drafted by Toronto Raptors.
Oh, yeah.
Drafted originally by Toronto Raptors, and they traded down to Indiana Pacers. So, dude, you were there for quite some time. Yeah. Then all of a sudden you come out to the West Coast.
Yeah.
How are you digging? Is it too congested, too much traffic, too much BS compared to where you were?
There's a lot of BS, but I try to make sure I stay away from it. You know, I always said if I was 21 when I got drafted, if I got drafted to L.A. at 21, I probably would have lost my mind. You know, there's a lot of stuff to get into. But when you're 21 and you're in Indiana, you go, you work out in the morning, then you just go home. There's nothing that much to do. So I stay focused.
Man, you've been on the road forever.
Yeah.
What was the swing when you come out of college, because you were highly touted in 2007, you were a lottery pick, and you decided, you declared for the draft, but you didn't get an agent, you decided to come back.
Yeah.
Hindsight being 2020, good call?
I think it was the right call. I got my degree in government, political science, so my parents were happy. I'm happy, but I wasn't ready. I wanted to enjoy the college lifestyle one more year. So in the long run, you know, I married my college sweetheart, you know, so we're out here. So I think things turned out all right.
Man, I'm happy you said you got a degree, because when I dropped out, I think I had 17 hours to graduate, and I would have been the first kid from my family to graduate, or the only one to graduate, and I dropped out, and I was riding on scholarships, and man, that broke my parents' heart, so it's a good thing for that. Now, let's go back to you, man. You've been doing, and me and Roy decided before we start rolling camera, the rolling sound here, we're just going to kick it around and have a conversation, so this ain't no interview per se, because Roy talks about basketball. We'll touch upon basketball, but we'll cover a lot of stuff in this conversation. Hey, man, let's talk about you, though, because I know you've got some acting credits. Well, you got aspirations of getting on the big screen after you retire, hopefully down the road.
Well, you know, I did some cameos of myself, but to tell you the truth, this summer before I got traded to L.A., I talked to my agent. I said, hey, you know what? I'm about to turn 30. You know, I got to start thinking about the future. So, and I love television. I watch a lot of reality TV. I know this is probably not what you would watch, but I watch, you know, the wife and myself, we watch Housewives, and we watch, you know, all that stuff. We watch Total Divas, you know, little stuff. But I said I wanted to find out how things are made, how TV shows are made. So for a week, I would say interned at WME, a talent agency, and I, 7 a.m., put on a suit, and I actually sat in on some calls. Brad Slater, I got to sit with him, and actually heard The Rock talk about some things that he was working on. So, and to tell you the truth, I talked to some production companies as well. I went out to a couple of them just to talk to them, pick their brain. So I said, you know what, you know, maybe I meet a lot of different people. Maybe get a executive producer credit, bring some people to these production companies and just start, you know, making my way, because I don't have the time right now to say I want to start my own production company, run it. But maybe I can just start learning. So 8-9 years when I'm done playing, I can go ahead and, you know, have a little better foothold in the TV space. So.
Man, I tell you, a long time ago, I told this story before. I'll give you the long story short. On an airplane, I'm in the back talking to The Rock. And we've been on a long swing on the road. And I said, hey, man, where are you headed? Miami. That's where he was living. He goes, no, man, I'm going out to L.A. I said, what you doing out in L.A.? He said, I'm working on some things. Well, man, Rock was already planting those seeds. I mean, now he's reaping the benefits now. I mean, he's crushing it. So Rock was doing, you know, what you're doing right now, you know, getting in there. And that's half the thing. It's just getting yourself introduced. Now, are you cool with stepping off the court when you do, being behind the camera and doing the producing type stuff? Or are you hung up on, hey, man, I still want to, if I can entertain or if I can do something, I'm good being in front of the camera?
You know, I'm more of like a low-key, behind-the-scenes type of guy. You know, I think that just learning, going to those production companies, just saying, hey, you know what, you have an idea, you get some people together, you get some writers together, and as opposed to being on the screen, you get to 100 episodes or you get a reality TV show and then you have a couple spinoffs, and then, you know, you can reap the benefits and, you know, in syndication and stuff like that. So I'm more looking towards that. You know, I'm not, to be honest with you, I'm real myself. I'm not one of those people like Dwight Howard who have like this aura, or like LeBron. People want to see those guys, but, you know, I'm more of like behind the scenes, and I'm realistic about who I am and what I can do. So I would rather, I have a ton of ideas. I write them down, and hopefully I can do something with that in the future.
I'm glad that you write those ideas down, because, man, like, I forget half the stuff I thought of. I was thinking of questions last night before our conversation, and I woke up and I was like, man, those are some good questions to ask Roy. But my pad was like 5 feet away. I said, well, I ain't going to get out of bed to get that pen. So I forgot the questions. But I always tell some of these up-and-comers, you know, they got a chance to be a superstar. And really, in the wrestling business, anybody has a chance to be a superstar, you got to break through. But I tell them, man, I said, if I could only tell you one thing, it'd be to write a diary of all the places you've been. Just, I mean, if it's only 3 sentences for the entire day, write a damn diary. And if it ends up being a page, it does. But one of these days, I mean, if you strike gold, man, there's a couple million-dollar book laying there. Or if you don't strike gold, but, I mean, you get over to some degree, there's a source of income there. And you got to jot it down. So
I agree. And to tell you the truth, I don't know if that career path is the right thing for me, but I want to try it. Like, while I'm here, I might as well, you know, try to wet my beak maybe and, like, and try to see if, you know, television is where I want to go or in other aspects. But, you know, LA has a plethora of things that you can get into, and hopefully I can do something with it.
Hey, man, you said you're low-key guy. Yeah. So you're walking down the sidewalk. I stuck my head out of the gate to see if Roy's coming in. Man, you're hard to miss.
Yeah.
You're 7'2". I gave Roy the biggest chair inside my house, and he's crushing it.
Yeah.
What are you wearing right now, 270, 280?
Yeah, about 280. Yeah.
Okay, I want to get into your training here in a minute. But you said you're low-key. When you come into the league, when you grew up, you're from Queens, New York.
Yeah.
Did you come from middle income, low income?
Man, we were. I was born in Queens, raised in Maryland.
Yeah.
But you know, as I grow up, when you're a kid, you don't understand that you're poor. You know, you just that's what you have. You know, so and then when I got to college, my parents told me they almost lost a house a couple times and stuff like that. So I was fortunate to be able to take care of my folks with the position that I'm in. And but yeah, it was. I made the best of the situation that I was in when I was a kid, but you know, you definitely appreciate it then when you look back.
Man, when I got into some good money years on the back, on the, you know, when I got hot, you know, that's when I started messing around with a few cars, but I never went car crazy like some people are inclined to do, and that's their business. But man, you know, that cars are a gimmick and take a lot of damn money real quick in a blink of an eye. So did you go through the car phase? Cause you're 29, dude. I was a little bit older than you when I started doing all this, but I, you know, had a pretty good run like you're in right now.
Yeah.
So are you a car guy?
Man, you're gonna think I'm a goody two shoes, but when I was a rookie, I had just got my license and, I always wanted to have a Range Rover and, but I actually couldn't fit in the front. I was too big for it. But I got a 08, I got a 07 Escalade, and I've had that my whole career, and I just leased a car. So I'm not really into cars too much because I can't really fit into a lot of them.
Right.
But I did get my seat pushed back a couple inches back and a couple inches down. But, you know, a couple of people have vices, but I still can't figure out mine. You know, I always said, you know, cars, jewelry aren't things that I'm really, really into too much.
Man, what about the lifestyle? You coming in NBA, your family almost lost a house a couple times, so you can come from money.
Yeah.
I come from a straight-up middle-class family. We never had too much money, and sometimes we scraped it pretty thin. I'll never forget, back in the day, Roy, you know, my parents used to have checkbooks, and my dad would balance his checkbook every month.
Yes.
And if that thing is a straight-up truth, if that checkbook was 5 cents off, you know, my mom's name is Beverly.
Yeah.
He goes, Beverly! And then they'd have a conversation and get that thing on track.
Yeah.
So when you come into the NBA, all of a sudden you get paid.
Yes.
And so now you got a lot of money.
Yeah.
Did the NBA, I mean, because I know the NFL has things where put all the guys in there because, you know, they're rookies.
Yeah.
It's like a symposium of sorts where they smarten them up. Hey, man, don't do this. Or maybe here's what you could do with your money. Did they do that for y'all guys?
Yeah, we have a rookie transition program. And they it's a week long and guys hate it. But when you look back, It's very important. And to be honest with you, I'm not good with money. Math was never my thing. So once I started, I have a financial advisor, and one of the things I was always told was have somebody watch who's watching your money. So every now and then I'll have him audited just to make sure everything's supposed to be, because I'm not good with that. And, you know, so I don't mind paying somebody else outside of my circle to make sure everything's supposed to be where it's supposed to be.
But you keeping your eyes on that dude, right?
Yes.
Man, you hear a lot of horror stories. Guys work their ass off, and then all of a sudden, dude, it's gone. It's like, well, we invested it over here.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it was a straight-up scam.
Yeah. So I have somebody watching him. And, you know, as I get older, I need to continue to do a better job of making sure I learn that, because I'm not always going to have somebody watching over my money like that. I might have to take the reins on that.
I saw a video of you on the internet, and it was Day in the Life of an All-Star.
Yeah.
Two-time All-Star.
Yes, sir.
So I'm guessing, where did you live, in Indianapolis?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
So the crib you had there, and then all of a sudden you come out to L.A.
Yeah.
And, man, how long you been here now? Because this is your first year.
It's about to be almost a year coming up. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Right along the year.
So when you come out here, and like I said, you've been here many times, but you weren't shopping for a house.
Yeah.
Did you buy a lease?
Well, I came out here. We rented, you know, we have a 13-month, you know, lease. I have a 1 year left of my deal. So I don't know where I'm going to go in the future. But I did buy in Indiana because I felt that I was going to be there for a couple of years. So just in the process of selling that house right now. But as of right now, until I'm done playing, I'll probably rent or lease until I know where I'm going to live once my career is done.
Damn, dude. Good call. I mean, the market's high right now. It was high when you came in. And, you know, if, you know, 1 year deal is 1 year deal. It's just straight up.
Yeah.
So you don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I just tried to, because, and then also this moving stuff from place to place. So we might as well just put some stuff in storage and just rent some place that's furnished.
Did it shock you though, when all of a sudden you come out here and, cause I know what you're paying for rent.
The rent is high.
Yeah.
The rent is high. And I have, in where I live in Manhattan, like Manhattan Beach, El Segundo area, I have four dogs. I have, you know, two big German Shepherds, and they need a little bit of land just to do their thing. And it's very hard to find that staying within my budget, you know. So, but I was able to do that, though. So, yeah.
All right, you live not too far from El Segundo. I got a beer with El Segundo Brewing Company.
Yeah,
do you drink at all?
I don't drink. I have that body type where I might just, like, blow up, you know.
Dude, so. I done blow it up. I'm trying to get ready for WrestleMania, man. I went to get you at the gate, and, man, I blew up going to the gate. Yeah. So I'm trying to lose the drum. But, man, that's the best answer you could have given. Because, man, a lot of guys, man, you know, you're in the mix.
Yeah.
You get out on the road, and especially in the unsanctioned world that I come from, I mean, it's everything but your kitchen sink. So that's a good thing.
I mean, I would have loved to, like, hear, like, obviously the stories of you guys on the road and stuff like that, man. I mean, like I feel like WWF, like I grew up watching that, and just imagine you guys just probably had tons of stories. And
dude, we got tons of stories, and I got three divorces. I can tell you I had a good time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I look at you with a smile on my face.
Yeah.
And when did you start watching wrestling? If you're 29, how old were you when you started?
Probably early 90s. I remember I never had cable. Yeah, because we couldn't afford it. So, and then we would always have something where I could hook up in the back and it'd be fuzzy. I'd see you guys. And there used to be like some Saturday morning, they used to have some wrestling things from time to time. I'd watch that because that was on broadcast TV, I believe. But then, since I was probably like 9, 10 years old, I've been watching, you know. I went to, in Washington, D.C., there was a SummerSlam in D.C. or something like that. And it was like one of the most fun times I've had. You know, going to a match and everything like that.
Well, I know you're sitting there talking to me, but who are some of your favorites that you remember vividly?
You know, I will say this, though. Obviously, you're up there, but besides you, I was 6'2 when I went into sixth grade. I was 6'6, 6'8 in eighth grade. So I was always a tall guy. So Undertaker was my guy.
Yeah.
You know, Undertaker was a 7-footer, you know, big guy. I was like, you know, always root for the Undertaker and the Big Show and the big guys, you know, so Kane and everything like that. So I always rooted for, and Undertaker was probably my guy, you know.
Okay, man, Taker, I think when he's got Shane McMahon, do you, as much as you're on the road, are you able to follow wrestling anymore?
The past couple of years, but when I was a kid, like when I was in high school, like, you know, Shane, you know, all those guys, I used to watch, you know, Triple H. You know, Stephanie McMahon from Edge and all that stuff like that.
Yeah.
Supposed to get married. You know, I remember all those storylines. You know, so.
Okay, but Undertaker's got Shane O'Mac, Shane McMahon, in a Hell in a Cell match.
Yes.
So that's going to be brutal.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Taker, man, I give that guy so much credit. He's been in the business for over 25 years.
Yeah.
And WWF for 23 or 4, whatever it is, maybe 25 in the WWF. And he still got some years before that. He started about a year and a half before I did.
Yeah.
But, dude, guys that tall or that long, when you're hitting that mat, it's a whole different physiology or kinesiology than a guy like me bumping. I'm 6'1". I used to be 6'2", until I got dropped on my head.
Uh-huh.
So being longer is kind of a disadvantage. I don't know how that guy's held himself together for so long.
Yeah.
He's had, to me, one of the best careers in the entire history of the business.
Yeah. I mean, hands down, you know, what? How many WrestleManias has he I think the last one he lost, I believe.
Yeah, he lost. Well, let me see. Brock beat him at 30.
Yeah.
And then did he come back the next year? He was in Santa Clara, wasn't he? Hell, I don't even remember.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was, what, 22-1 or whatever. I'll tell you what, I was there in New Orleans that night, and I was in a production truck watching. I had a beer in each hand.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, man, I saw a referee count 3, and I said, it shocked me.
Yeah.
What did you think? Did you think that were you hoping that Taker would win that match, or are you surprised he lost?
I mean, I was hoping he would win, you know, but I still think this is his last year, right?
Yeah.
I think he's going to go on top no matter what. He's an icon in the series. So, I mean, one blemish, you know, one loss at WrestleMania isn't going to be, he's not going to be remembered for that, you know. So, but yeah, if you, you know.
Well, dude, I mean, a guy like Brock Lesnar beats you. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good day at the office.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't like Brock was chump change or anything.
Yeah.
That dude's a badass guy
when
you get up next to him. Hey, man, I want to take you back real quick. Let's tell a story about how you and I met. Because I'm going to tell my side of the story, and then I want you to fill in the blanks on the other side. So anyway, I work with Podcast One to do my podcast, right? So my business partner is Norm Pattis, the guy that owns Podcast One. He founded Westwood One way back in the day. So anyway, Norm calls me up. He says, hey, man, do you and your wife want to go to the basketball game, the Lakers game, with me and Mary? I was like, well, sure.
Yeah.
So anyway, we get all gussied up for me, and we go to the Lakers game, and I'll be danged if the Lakers ain't playing the Indiana Pacers. So that means this is before you was in L.A., you was an Indiana Pacer.
Yeah.
So there I am on the front row, sit with Norm and my wife and Mary, and you come over during the pregame warm-ups and shake my hand and say, hey, man, Roy Hibbert, nice to meet you. I said, well, hell, it was nice to meet you, too. So, dude, okay, you got a big game coming up.
Yeah.
It's Indiana versus Lakers. You're Indiana Pacer. You come over and you shake my hand. Do your teammates say, hey, man, focus on the game?
Well, I think in certain situations, like when you go to New York and L.A., sometimes they let you have a little bit of leeway because in Indiana, there's not a lot of celebrities there. But seriously, like I had to muster up the strength just to go over to you and say hello, you know. And seriously, like that was – I've done that a few times, but I was the most nervous. I literally sat in my car. Like, just sitting there like, yo, I'm about to walk into his house. I'm about to walk into his house. A friend of mine actually, I think, came over here. Well, I think Peter Rosenberg did your podcast, and his agent, I'm good friends with his agent. And I said, hey, you have any, like, tips for me or anything like that? He's like, no, he's a real cool, relaxed guy. You're good to go. And, like, seriously, like, I don't get starstruck, you know, a lot. But you, like, I had to do it. I had, you know, so... I didn't care what my teammates said, but yeah, that's exactly how it went down. And you know, I tweeted out that I talked to you and you know, we exchanged numbers, and you know, when I had a tough time in Indiana, you would send me like text messages, you know, encouraging messages and stuff like that. So I always appreciated that, you know, so you have a Warriors mentality. So whenever I could, you know, have, you know, words from you or get words from you, I appreciate it, you know.
Oh, man, that's cool.
Yeah.
It's funny, man. We started following each other on Twitter, and then we swapped our phone numbers. And then so, man, I got a text message. And then I was like, hey, man, do you want to go play paintball? And I had something to do so I could go play paintball.
Yeah.
Dude, how long have you been playing paintball?
Well, like 3 or 4 years. I'm not the fastest person, but it's actually fun just to go out there and just, you know, just play with your friends and everything like that. It doesn't hurt at all. People are nervous about that though, but it's just a spot I go up to like 20-30 minutes away from the house, and I get a couple good people there, and it's Hollywood Sports, and they take care of us.
You're a hell of a target.
Yeah, I am a big
target. Is there something tall enough for you to hide behind?
You know, I get down and dirty. I'll get on the ground. I'll start, you know, crawling and everything like that. I'll run from cover to cover. I'll actually go online and look up videos and tips on how to, like, properly shoot and run from cover and cover. So
dude, I'm going to take you up on an offer. One of these days, I'll go out there and play paintball with you. But, man, I'm a pretty good target myself because it ain't like I'm a speed demon out there.
No, you can lay down cover fire and let you guys, you know, go ahead and just
– See, y'all got all teamwork and stuff.
Yeah.
So how many will you normally go out there with?
I'll go out with, like 15 people, and then we'll play, you know, for about an hour or two and everything like that. So, but if you ever want to come, bring any friends, you know, you're more than welcome to.
Oh, no, I'm going to sit in on a session or run in on a session.
Yeah.
And – man, I'll be all marked up. Before I ask you how you got time to fit that in your schedule, I got to go back to Peter Rosenberg because, man, he's kind of known for his influence on the music scene.
Yeah, yeah.
So, speaking of music, what do you listen to these days?
Oh, man, I like a plethora of things, hip-hop, you know, R&B, but then, you know, I have a softer side, Adele. I listen to a little bit of Adele from time to time, so... you know, pop music or whatever like that, whatever's on the radio. But for the most part, it's hip-hop just to make sure I get my mind ready for the game.
And now, a word from Martellus Bennett, a professor at the Dos Equis College Football College.
Hey, college football fans. Martellus Bennett here. Do you want to win every football argument this season? Dominate every debate? Become a pigskin prodigy? Then enroll in a Dos Equis College Football College. where you'll learn from football insiders like me, Jay Cutler, Katie Nolan, and author John Bacon, the man who wrote the book on college football. So be the first in your family to earn a football watching certificate from a beer school. Enroll in Dos Equis College Football College at dosequis.com/edu.
Enjoy Dos Equis responsibly. Imported by Cervezas Mexicanas, White Plains, New York. Copyright 2019 Dos Equis Beer Brands. Official beer sponsor of the college football playoff.
Finally, there's a football beer school for me. Thanks, Martellus.
Monday night is podcast night.
For the Los Angeles Lakers.
What's happening, everybody? This is the official Lakers podcast. I'm your host, Mike Trudell. Super pumped to be here, flanked by Aaron Larsoul. You ready to go?
I'm ready to go. Let's get it.
I think the Lakers will be a top 10 defense.
Okay, you're calling your shot again.
A little turnaway pass blocked by Anthony Davis.
A team that has two stars, or two superstars in this case, as LeBron and AD, can sometimes cancel each other out. But I think they're both good candidates for MVP.
I really like the way that this team just feels to be around. Mm-hmm. It's a very clear message. It's two stars in LeBron and AD, and it's everybody else that's on board.
The relationship that is developing between those two off the court and on the court, their cohesiveness on the court, I think in this case, this is a special case that the two of them will enhance each other as opposed to taking away from each other.
Be sure to rate, subscribe, and leave a review.
Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
This is Steve Austin Unleashed.
Roy, man, I got to ask you, dude. You said, we were talking about beer a while ago, yeah. And I asked you if you drank, and you said no. You don't drink, and you got the kind of metabolism, you get a drum, a beer belly.
Yeah.
Okay, that being said, as active as you are, I mean, you're 7'2", 270.
Yeah.
Dude, how many calories you got to eat to maintain your weight?
Oh, man.
Do you count? Because you got a chef.
I do have a chef. And, so when I was in Indiana, I had a nutritionist work with the chef, and then they would prepare the meals. And then I forgot how many calories I'd eat, but it would be a lot a day. But I've seen stuff where, like, The Rock was eating fish every day and stuff. But it's not as much as that. But it's a lot, though. But so the team has a nutritionist here, and they work with the chef. So for the most part, they keep everything in check. So, yeah.
All right. With the strength training program, you went to college in Georgetown, and then you – through Indiana, now with the Lakers, what's the weight training program for a guy that's 7'2" that runs up and down a court?
Well, during the summer, we do like a lot of explosive Olympic lifting, you know, high pulls, cleans, front squats, back squats, push jerks and stuff like that. But during the season, because we have 82 games, we travel a lot. I try to lift as probably 3-4 days a week. We don't go as heavy during the summer, but we try to do a lot of maintenance work, a lot of 1 foot stabilization core stuff. You know, Judy, you know, works with me on my core all the time. You know, because that's probably like one of my weakest points, and so she does a good job of that. But it's a team effort, you know.
Yeah. Hey man, talk to me about injuries and at that level, because man, well, let me go back to that one game, man. It was you was a Pacer. Or some action, the dude shoved you, going for a rebound, the dude shoved you straight up. And then y'all got into it a little bit, and then Steph Curry come and kind of wrapped his arm around you. Man, you just shirked him with respect to Steph.
Yeah.
You just shirked him to the ground, and then it was on.
Yeah.
So it's physical. Dude, tell me about the injuries, and then we'll go into how physical it is.
Yeah.
But, dude, what about the injuries? You're kind of nursing a little bit of an ankle right now.
Well, yeah, I had a little bit of an ankle problem that I've been nursing, but, you know, Judy and the Lakers, Marco, been doing a good job of making sure everything's right. But I haven't had any major significant injuries since I was in high school. And I had broke my fifth metatarsal twice during the summer, between my sophomore and junior year. And so I have a screw put in. But for the most part, I've been good. You know, I haven't had to sit out too much. But to tell you the truth, the most I had to sit out for is blows to the head, you know. And sometimes you may get an errant elbow and stuff like that. So and my wife gets on me all the time for, like, trying to play through it, you know. And but I come home to a lot of angry stares sometimes when she knows that I got hit in the head and I didn't say anything.
But she knows what's up. She knows the physicality.
Yeah, she knows.
Sometimes you just watch it on TV, and if you're like, You know, they're just going for the – no, man.
Yeah.
I mean, that's – Yeah. You know, if I was – man, well, I don't play basketball, but, man, if I did and somebody cracked me in the head like that, man, it'd be on or it'd be something going on.
Yeah, man, but those fines come really heavy, so you think about it sometimes. But, you know, things happen, and you have to be smart. But with that whole situation with Steph and the Golden State Warriors, there was this video – of this guy, Kerman Washington, a long time ago in the 70s. And he was involved in an altercation with somebody. And then he said out of the corner of his eye, he saw somebody coming. And all of a sudden, he just turned and, like, swung in Rudy Tomjanovich. He broke his jaw. If you watch that video, it's crazy. So I saw Steph coming, and I didn't know what was going on. So I just wanted to make sure I got him off me.
Right.
And I didn't want to escalate the situation anymore. So, yeah.
That sounds good. I'll buy it.
Yeah.
Let's talk about fines. You said that word. You got hit for 75 large.
Yeah.
You dropped the F bomb.
Yeah.
We're talking about the All-Star game.
And yeah.
You're a 2-time All-Star yourself. Yeah. So, real deal fine? That wasn't no wrestling stuff?
No. It was 75. It hurt. You know, I said some dumb things in the media. You know, I was young. We just came off of a win. So so you live and you learn. So I got hit. But to tell you the truth, I got like 100,000 followers off of Twitter off of that. You know, so
yeah.
That's, you know, as meaningless as that is, I mean, I guess that's the only bright side that came out of getting fined, I guess.
Hey, man, let's talk about interviews after games or after a physical endeavor.
Yeah.
Because I know you're an MMA fan.
Yes.
Do you watch all the pay-per-views?
I try to as much as I can, but I feel like boxing – how I got into it was during the summer, ever since I was a kid, when you have to work out during the summer, they have you do the exact same drills. You on the court. So I said, "Huh, I wonder if there's a way I can still get in shape, but do something different." So I would do, you know, boxing, MMA, you know, and stuff like that. So I watch a lot of UFC. I watch a lot of reality shows. So The Ultimate Fighter, when the guys are in the house, I watch all that stuff. So, but yeah, I did some jiu-jitsu this summer, and it's actually pretty fun.
So how is that? Or was it a real eye-opener? Because, man, sometimes I'm watching these guys on the ground. Avid MMA guy, especially UFC, and I get damn near every pay-per-view they put on.
Yeah.
So, man, but sometimes just like when you watch two guys that are badass in jiu-jitsu or just one start doing work, and you're like, man, what is the process? Because years and years ago, I mean, when the guy or the two guys, I mean, do they just sit around in a room like this and just start tying each other up? And you look at the progression and the way things have evolved, and it's just absolutely – it's crazy.
Yeah, it is. It is. And
you got a belt or what? What's your goal?
Well, I was doing it 3 days a week before I got traded to the Lakers, and then I put that to the side. But so like I seriously don't like dropping names, and like I'm a low key guy. But the UFC came to Indiana 1 year. They had a main event. Dana White, you know, got some of us some tickets. Exchanged numbers with him. We talked from time to time. And I text him, "Hey, I'm coming to L.A. I want to pick up jiu-jitsu. You know anybody out here?" And then so he's like, "All right, the Gracie family is like one of the biggest jiu-jitsu families out there." So he put me in touch with them and actually working with them. And I have not gotten to a lot of street fights, but I assume when smaller guys go after bigger guys, they try to, like, get them to the ground. So I say, "Hey, you know, I should learn how to, you know, if I do get to the ground, how to protect myself and defend myself." So I did a little bit of ground work. So I'm going to continue that this summer.
But, man, I watched one of your training videos. You look like you got good hands. You like to throw the knees.
Yeah.
The kicks, you thought because you're so tall?
Yeah.
But, I mean, dude, it looks like you've been doing it for a while.
I've been trying. And but I have a profound respect for a sport that you go one-on-one in the ring. There's no team, you know, so it's all mental, all preparation. So you can't say, "Hey, my teammate didn't do this. I didn't do this. They didn't help me out." You know, so as much as it is physical, it's mental. And I love that aspect. So, and it takes balls to get into a ring octagon and go mano a mano like that, you know. So yeah.
Do you have a favorite fighter or people that you've enjoyed watching them fight?
Man, like, I have a friend, Matt Matrione.
Yeah.
I worked out at his gym in Indiana. He got his eye busted big the other day in the fight. I always wanted to know if when guys trash talk, like the McGregor fight, and those guys, I always wanted to know if is it really like they trash talking for real just to sell the fight, or they really don't like each other, you know?
I think it's a combination of both.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just my opinion. If you could ask both those young men, and they might tell you something completely different, but I think it's a little bit of both. And man, it's been real interesting to watch Conor McGregor just come up through the ranks, and then all of a sudden he gets Jose Aldo in there and clips him right there when they clash at 13 seconds. Yeah. Down goes Aldo, and man, here's Conor McGregor in a great situation to be in.
Yeah.
Man, I think the guy is heavy-handed. I think he's very skilled.
Yeah,
I thought
he gets in there like he's like, come on, hit me, you know? So, and I think people enjoy that, but, you know, I remember, what's his name, Silva, he was doing the same thing. He got clipped and knocked out like three, 4 fights ago, you know? So, but I'm a fan.
Oh, was he doing that with Bisping? Are you talking about the Chris Weidman fight?
Yeah, no, I think it was the Chris Weidman fight. Yeah. So that was tough. That was tough.
Did the cardio transfer over from running up and down the court to, you know, grappling with someone in jiu-jitsu or throwing the punches and kicks? Because, dude, to me, cardio is very specific.
Yeah.
I can get on my my bike in the garage on my Precor machine and haul ass.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I want to go out and do some road work. Not so much.
Yeah. I would say that it didn't transfer 2 or 3 months into the season because – you know, those are like short bursts of work, and when you're on the court, you're running, you're shifting and stuff like that. But I definitely felt like it got me in shape. It's a lot of mental work, you know. They tell me, all right, you lay on the ground, and I have a jiu-jitsu trainer who's 100 and Chris Light, who's 100 and say 70 pounds, 90 pounds, and he just lays on top of me, and he uses all his angles right. And he says you have a minute to get up.
Yeah,
and you have to fight your way up. It's tough, and you have to, like, you know, mentally, you know, say, all right, he takes this away. I have to try to move this foot, you know, this angle right here just to get up. So I like that.
What do you think your strong point is from the MMA skills that you got? What would you say is your strong point?
For me, at least, it's just balance and core. Like, that to me is like the biggest thing. Just being able to get down low, get positioned, carve out space, as opposed to, like, you know. You don't see many MMA guys just flat-footed standing straight up. You're probably going to get, you know, tagged. So that's probably the biggest thing for me is just, you know, owning the space, getting low. So, yeah.
Man, I tell you what, when you're talking about footwork, that Frankie Edgar got the damnedest footwork I think I've ever seen. I mean, that cat, whatever he does, he just always seems like he's in the perfect position to do whatever he wants to do.
Yeah.
And, man, he's got a big fight if he can get that championship fight. But that guy is just premier.
Yeah, he is. And remember, he had a great fight against, BJ Penn a couple of years ago. So, but, yeah, I don't watch many of the little guys. Like, I don't want to disrespect anybody with the smaller guys. But yeah, they're very technical. But something about seeing those, you know, I remember when Brock was in there, it's just – you always root for the bigger guys because I'm 270, you know, a big guy. So, yeah.
It's fun to watch a heavyweight fight because, I mean, man, they're wearing, 4-ounce gloves?
Yeah.
So in any weight class, anything can happen.
Yeah.
But, dude, man, some of those guys, you know, the heavyweight division, I mean, there's still some monsters in there.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't want to get tagged with the 4-ounce glove while someone's wearing it.
Yeah, that's true. I was going to ask, like, what do you think is the best – the best situation for Ronda, because, like, you know, she's such a polarizing figure, and, like, I know that like, your profession is important, but at the same time, for a long haul, you have to think about outside of the ring and the octagon, and, you know, she has a lot of things going on. Do you think that could also, like, from your perspective and other wrestlers are trying to break out, does that actually detract from what they're doing, or, like, do fans get on you guys so saying, hey, you know what? You guys shouldn't be doing this movie. You should be focusing on the ring, because I get that a lot.
Man, when you talk about Ronda Rousey, I got a ton of respect for her.
Yeah.
Where she came from, where she is, and what she's accomplished. It's going to be an interesting. She's got a documentary they're working on right now. I guess they're about to put the wraps on that. But that'll be an interesting documentary to see, and I will. But that was a hard fight to watch because I liked where Holly Holm came from, her boxing background.
Yeah.
And, man, when Ronda was, you know, doing business and tapping everybody out, just so fierce. And she came to the ring, you know, with that judo background, you know, everybody, you know, wrong tactics, you know, to try to fight her.
Yeah.
And she just, I mean, I'd like to say she outmanned them because that's what we say. She outfought them. I mean, she's just a fighter. And, man, all of a sudden, man, she went up there against Holly Holm, and it was kind of some kryptonite. It's the only way I can describe it.
Yeah.
Because that's what Holly Holmes was.
Yeah.
And so it'll be interesting. I mean, she got so much, so many irons in the fire.
Yeah.
I think she's probably one of the busiest human beings going right now.
Yeah.
Coming from the athletic world, MMA, to cross over big time in the mainstream.
Yeah.
It will be interesting to see what happens because, you know, coming up, this podcast will play after that fight, but on March the 5th, you know, Holly Holm's going to fight Miesha Tate.
Yeah.
And then after that, the winner will go on probably in July to face Ronda.
Yeah.
And so it's either going to be the rematch or it's going to be Ronda versus Miesha.
But that's been done
Well, it's been done twice.
Yeah.
So it'll be, you know, the third time, but it will be from a different perspective.
That is true.
Because this will be the first time that Ronda suffered a defeat.
Yeah.
And how will she come back from that fight?
Yeah.
I would think if it is Miesha, then I think that Ronda has a psychological advantage because she's beat her twice.
Yeah.
If it's Holly, then I think, with all due respect to both women, that Holly has the psychological advantage because she defeated her handily and she took the belt.
Yeah.
So, you know, to answer your question, you know what, do I think she's too busy or whatever? Nah, man, she's doing life.
Yeah.
And she made her mark on the MMA world. I'm interested to see what happens on the backside.
Yeah.
But, I mean, man, here's the thing. They always tell you, make hay while the sun shines.
Yeah.
She's making hay while the sun shines.
I think you always got to think about your future. You're not going to be able to always be in the ring too much. And I just saw the movie Deadpool. And it was a great movie. It's probably one of the best superhero movies I've seen in a long time. But there was a woman, her name's not coming to me. She was an MMA fighter. And now she's doing movies.
Jenny Garano?
Yes, yes. And I had to Google her, and I was like, yo, that's her. So, I mean, I think she's done a couple more. I think she's in the Fast and the Furious as well. So, I believe, I could be wrong, but I think it's important, and fans don't. I guess when you were wrestling, you didn't have Twitter and social media and stuff like that.
No.
You know, as soon as I may tweet out, hey, I'm going to go, you know, to the movies, you know, or something like that. And people are like, you should be in the gym, you know?
Yeah.
So you can't have a life outside of your profession, you know? So I'm sure that it was a little bit easier times when you were wrestling, you know, so.
Well, I didn't have anybody yelling at me.
Yeah.
And a lot of those opportunities I never heard about, man, because I was kind of helping pull a wagon.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, man, he don't need to hear no offers. We got this for him to do.
Yeah.
But, man, it's just like everybody tell you what you should do or what you could do.
Yeah.
But, you know, she's doing what she is.
Yeah.
And I just got a ton of respect for her.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see on the backside, Roy, her fighting background, her charisma, her looks, just everything about her talent.
Yeah.
You know, got her on the big screen and through all of her commercials and everything.
Yeah.
It parlayed into that. Now, has she been there long enough so that just sustains itself?
Yeah.
Or just say, as we talk, we don't know what's going to happen, but – in July, when she fights again, if she loses again, does the momentum slow just because, you know, she lost?
Yeah.
Or has she been there long enough that just keeps moving forward without the fight to help push it?
That's true.
What do you think?
I think another loss would not be the best thing, but she has a powerful, like agent, I guess, in the industry. So I'm not sure how, if he could parlay that into more on-screen things, but you know, it'll be interesting to see, but I hope, I'm a big fan of Ronda, and I hope she comes back and wins this next fight.
It will be a hellacious fight, and I think everybody would predict that it'll be probably the biggest box office they've ever drawn from a pay-per-view standpoint, because I almost get everything every single time, 11 out of 12 or 10 out of 12 I get.
Yeah.
But, man, for that, I'd double down on because I just want to see that rematch. And here's the thing. It's a tough spot to be in because I'm a fan of both women.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm going to be heartbroken whether one of them loses and one of them wins because, you know, you want both of them to be able to win, but it can't happen like that.
It can't happen like that, though.
But I got respect for both of them. Yeah. For Holly to come, you know, just from kind of doing some kickboxing, like 13-time world champion boxer, then for Ronda to come from the judo background, from the Olympics, and to parlay all that into the success that she's had, you just hate to see someone ride off with the L and not the W.
Yeah, you know, I seriously want to know, because like I'm a low key guy. I don't talk trash unless somebody starts talking trash to me. So I wonder if if Ronda's, like, if she does fight Holly Holmes again, will she be as talkative as she was in the past, you know? Because she's never been in this situation. And to tell you the truth, I hope that she continues to be the same Ronda as she was in the past. And people like that bravado and that toughness, I think, that helps her in the ring as well.
When she walks to the ring, I call it the BMF walk. Yeah. That's what Jim Ross asked me one time in an interview. He goes, why do you walk to the ring like that? And I say, I'm sending out a message to the person I'm about to do battle with. Now, Ronda does her own thing, but I call it that's her BMF walk. But, you know, that weigh-in before the fight, I didn't think Holly had ruffled her feathers.
Yeah.
You know, before the fight, before the other person had made a personal comment about a family member. And so, man, that was, you don't go there.
Yeah.
But Holly didn't do that. Yeah. So she was pretty animated before the fight. And, you know, she's been on the biggest stages of all with the Olympics.
Yeah.
So I didn't know why that rattled her.
But
it was, she just kind of came, lost her composure a little bit and wasn't like her. And then she didn't touch gloves. And I thought that was a little off because.
But does she do that? I can't remember. Does she touch gloves normally before fights?
I believe she does.
Oh.
But now that you asked me that, I can't remember.
Yeah.
You're on an NBA team. You've been doing this a long time. So it ain't but a thing to you. But tell me about the schedule, dude. How many games y'all got regular season?
82 games regular season and a lot of 4 games and 5 nights. We just came back from Denver last night, and that was a tough one because people don't understand that we can have a game in L.A., let's say tonight, and then we'll fly to Denver. So we'll take off at, like, midnight. The flight to Denver is 2 hours and, like, some change, 2 hours and 30. And then when we get there, the next morning we have a meeting at 12 o'clock. We'll go over film, we'll have breakfast, but you also lose an hour. So that means, you know, you only get, let's say, like maybe 5 hours of sleep. And then you have your meeting, then you try to get like an hour and a half nap before the game. And then so sometimes you're running on fumes. And then, you know, the altitude kicks my ass.
Yeah.
You know, I have asthma, so... So you have to get your second win as fast as possible. So it's tough sometimes. In Indy, it was great because we were smack dab in the middle. So, you know, longest flight would probably be 2 hours and some change either way, you know. But in L.A., we'll have a game tonight, then we'll have fly out to Philadelphia the next night. And, you know, so it takes a toll, but I'm used to it right now and try to help the rookies out because they hit the rookie wall from time to time, you know, because you go from playing in college 30 games – but we do that in the first 2.5 months of the season. So, but
you get through 30 games, and all of a sudden it's still going on.
It's still going on.
You're going to do more than double that.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, the playoffs, it gets more intense. So it's tough, but I guess I'm a homebody. So, I have my ways to keep myself occupied when I'm on the road. So,
that's the thing about living on the West Coast. Man, it's great being here. And in my opinion, out of all the places I've been, you cannot touch Southern California weather, whether you're in San Diego, L.A., whatever. SoCal is badass.
Yeah.
On the other side of that, to your point, anytime you're on the left side of the United States, if you're looking at a picture of it, the West Coast, everywhere you go is a flight that way.
Yeah.
You know, being in Texas or being in Indy, that's a little bit more central to, you know, going to work.
Yeah, yeah. So but I would tell you this, though. This is my first winter with no snow, so that was probably one of the biggest things.
You had to dig out, right?
Yeah, I love that. You know, so myself and the wife love that. You know, so but it was definitely great though. But losing hours when you fly out east is definitely tough.
Hey man, you mentioned the rookies, and now they're you guys, man. I got your record written down.
It's not good.
It's not that great. You're 12-50.
Yeah.
And so then, how's the morale in the locker room?
It's been a tough year. Myself, I'm trying to make sure I try to stay as positive as possible because I've been on teams where we've had a lot of success and we've had our ups and downs, but we grew as a team and we obviously made it to the playoffs and a little bit further. So, but yeah, this is it's tough. We're young. We have a 20-year-old point guard, a lot of young guys. So. Just trying to help those guys as much as possible because they're the future. So, obviously, with Kobe's last year, it's like a movie. It's like cameras everywhere. We're on the plane. We're in the lobby. You know, we're in the elevators. There's cameras everywhere, and it's definitely something I'm not used to.
Hey, man, D'Angelo Russell lit up for 39 points the other night.
Yeah.
Did that spark the team just because, I mean, that hadn't been done in, like, since 61 or 2, something like that?
You know, I'm really happy for D'Lo. You know, he's one of the guys that I say, if I'm going paintball, he's like, I'm there. Every time, he loves it. You know, he'll run around for hours. He's a young kid. But I'm really happy for him because at the beginning of the season, so he was drafted second. And Jahlil, so people wanted this kid, Jahlil Okafor, who went to Philly number 3, to be drafted number 2. He's a tremendous talent, great center. He's going to be an all-star very soon. And so he's in Philly. And, you know, D'Lo didn't start off the season the way how people wanted him to. And I'm just saying, hey, you know, I was never drafted number 2. I was drafted 17th, so the expectations weren't that high to begin with. But people were saying that, oh, they should have not drafted him. They were dogging him. I tell people in the media, just relax. He's 19 years old. It's going to come together. You're going to be surprised. No, you're not going to be surprised. You're going to see it. You know, maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but someday. So the fact that he dropped 39, I'm happy for him. You know, and I told him, you know, these naysayers, you remember all these people who are writing, you know, crap about you in the paper, tweeting at you, you're garbage, this, that, and the other. Because he's killing. He's going to have a bright future.
Dude, you were drafting at number 17 in the first round, and then he was drafted number 2.
Yes.
Tell me about the pressure. Like you said, he's got more on him because he's the number 2 guy.
Yeah.
So how do you deal with the pressure? You're a 2-time All-Star.
Yeah.
So, I mean, do you set out every year? Like, I would imagine you're a pretty thoughtful guy.
Yeah.
That you have goals that you set out every year to accomplish.
Obviously, to me, I'm always a team player. I'm not the type of player that can go off and drop 30. You know, I'm more of a, you know, make sure I keep the ball moving, defend well, do the dirty work, you know, make sure the things that people don't usually see on the stat sheets, I'll set the good screens, be physical. So, and then, you know, the way I was an All-Star was I was playing well, but at the same time, the team was playing well too. When I was an All-Star, we were number 1, first in the East, you know, first, second, or third in the East, and we did it together.
You mentioned, I think you're going to talk about, training, you got great trainers, and I think you brought up something about a sports psychologist.
Yes.
You ever use sports psychologist? You get in a slump? Or like D'Angelo? I mean, because all of a sudden everybody's saying, hey, you need to do better than this?
No, I think he always had it in him. But sometimes, you know, in Indiana, they would say if you got a fine, you unofficially, they want you to go talk to the head doctor. So every now and then you just talk to you about, you know, just unloading some things. Because people see what we do on the court and on the television, but they don't know certain things that may affect us. You know, to me, dealing with, when I first got in the league, dealing with family and friends asking for money, you know, basically saying, hey, I'm going to be kicked out of my house unless you pay, you know, or not pay, but like unless you help me out. And, you know, sometimes like, hey, how do you say no to somebody that, you know, you grew up, you know, who was like a uncle or somebody like that. So just talking, not necessarily on the court stuff, but sometimes off the court stuff, you know, you have to deal with, because when you're 21 years old and they give you this contract, you know, some people spend all their money right away, or some people just, you know, go crazy. You know, so as much as it is on the court, it's all off the court stuff too. So,
dude, I remember when we were down there. It was at 9/11 when the Trade Centers got blown up, and one of the lawyers there I was walking around with, we were down there. It might have been 7 or 8 or 10 days after. I can't remember the time period, but it was still smoldering up, and I'll never forget that. And one of the lawyers that I was walking with had done a lot of work with Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
And we were just talking as we were kind of walking. It was a very, at time you had tears in your eyes because of all the stuff that's going on. But in the conversation, we started talking about Mike. And it was like, they said, how much money Mike generated, close to $500 million in his fights. And then I guess he was bankruptcy or whatever. But, I mean, he had given everybody cell phones, cars, you know, this posse on the payroll. Yeah. It's like, man, I know Mike a little bit. Yeah. Did some business with him back in the day in the ring.
Yeah.
Man, he's a good dude. Yeah. I enjoyed hanging around with him. But, man, he just – and his friends leased off of him.
Yeah.
And he was such a nice guy. And irresponsible on top of that, to be quite frank.
Yeah.
I think he would tell you the same. But, you know, now he ain't – got all that money.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I never had like a big circle. I have my folks who I said, you know, when I was a kid, I used to watch, when we did get cable, I used to watch VH1, and it was like Life of the Rich and Famous. I said, if I ever make it to the NBA, I want to be like those people. And then when you get there, you're like, do I really need to have a yacht? Do I, you know, not a yacht, but like a boat, or do I really need to have this big of a house and stuff like that? So I said, once I get to the NBA, I told my parents, most people buy their parents a house. I said, wait 4 years, let me get my second deal, and then I'll get you a house, as opposed to, you know, because you never know what might happen. I may go 3 years in and I may be out, you know. So I got my parents a house after my fourth or fifth year in the league. I got them, and they're pretty frugal people too. I wanted to buy them like a brand new car. My dad said, no, I want to have, if you're going to get me something, I'll get a pre-owned car, you know. And my mom wanted a pre-owned car too. So nothing, I got them a Ford Explorer and I think a Nissan. So they're, you know, they're pretty low key too. So yeah.
Well, that's a pretty damn cool story.
Yeah.
And down there in Edna where I grew up, and it ain't pre-owned, it's used.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but that is soft-spoken and as a homebody as you are.
Yeah.
You said earlier in a conversation, and you don't like to talk trash unless somebody talks trash to you.
Yeah.
So tell me about you talking trash, because you're very humble. I get that. You're all about team. I understand that, and I appreciate it, because I was a team player when I played team sports back in my high school, college days.
Yeah.
So what lights you up enough to get you talking trash back?
Man, you know, I always heard stories about this guy, and like, it's well known he's a trash talker, so it's not like I'm putting his business out there or anything, but like when I was growing up, KG was somebody I really looked up to.
Yeah.
And then like, so I get out there on the court, he's playing for Boston, and I got there, and he's like, he yells to whoever, Paul Pierce or whoever's point guard, and I'm a rookie, and he's like, oh, give me the ball, I got this cupcake bitch guarding me. I'm like, yo, what the hell? And then so he tried to score on me, this, that, and the other. I said, man, you ball-headed bitch. You know, so it's getting back and forth. And that's the most that I will say, cursing-wise on here. But it goes back and forth. And he brings out something in me sometimes, you know. But I have a tremendous respect for him. You know, he's a talented player that's been playing for years. But he holds no punches when it comes to, like, the young guys and the rookies coming into the league, you know.
When you get in that league,
and that's,
you know, that's the major league, that's NBA. Yeah. And probably for Georgetown too, but let's stay with the pro league.
Yeah.
If you don't talk trash back, I mean, are there some people just remain silent? Or is a thing where, obviously, like that one time under the bucket when Steph grabbed you and you shirked him off, when that dude pushed you, you had to push him back.
Yeah, you had to.
You got to stand your ground, or you will get punked out.
Yeah, you will get punked out. But you know, sometimes, like, I have a lot of respect for Steph, because every night I'm sure he gets the other team's best defense, and he's the MVP, and he's been playing great. And I don't think I've heard him say one word. But then there'll be other guys who I won't name, but, you know, who are talented players just as, you know, as good, who will talk trash, you know. And, you know, but there's certain guys like LeBron, Steph, and D-Wade who don't really talk at all and just go about their business, you know. So one person I thought would talk trash, who's probably one of the nicest guys ever, was Shaq. And I got a chance to play against him, and it was an experience. It was towards the end of his career, but I heard some stories about him back.
Well, how was that playing with Shaq? Because I mean, I met Shaq back in the '90s when he was just, you know, in his early NBA career.
Yeah.
And you know, tall as you, and a little bit heavier. He's a big dude. You know the guy.
Yeah.
So
he was breaking rims, just destroying the NBA, and like he was. Him and Tim Duncan were my two favorite players.
Tim Duncan is my favorite player.
Yeah.
The Spurs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my guy.
I love his game.
Yeah.
And I love him. Yeah, to me, man, you talk about representing. That dude's so straight up, just low-key.
Yeah.
And just, I don't know, to me, from an outsider looking in, the few times that I've brushed by Tim, just the consummate professional.
He is.
And a good human being.
Yeah, he is. I like, when I was a kid, the NBA All-Star game was in D.C., and my high school coach got me these tickets, a couple of our guys on the team tickets to this panel, because during the All-Star game, All-Star weekend, they have you doing a bunch of different things.
Yeah.
And so he had to do this panel, and like I said, I was in 6'9", 6'10", in high school, freshman year, And I walk past, I'm walking to like the audience sits, and he's sitting there with his hand on his head, like almost about to fall asleep. And I shake his hand, I'm like, hey, Tim, you know, this, that, and the other. So when I get to play against him, I told him the story, and we actually, he became like I'd say like a mentor. So I go out to San Antonio and work out with him.
Wow.
He'd take me out to eat. And so from time to time, you know, we text back and forth and stuff like that. So I really look up to him. To me, it was always Tim Duncan, quiet, like went about his business, kicked your ass on the court,
yeah.
And he wouldn't hear a peep. And then it was always Shaq, because, you know, who wouldn't want to break down rims and you know, stuff like that. So those are the two people I looked up to when I was a kid and I got a chance to compete against.
When you started competing in the NBA, was there anybody you were totally starstruck on the court? Or it was go mode, it didn't matter.
I would say LeBron, because even just is not because I looked up to him, but because we were like, we're probably like a year or two apart from high school. You know, when he left in 04, I was probably like a sophomore, junior in high school. So, but just his physical talent, just the things he can do on the court, I'm like, Jesus, like, you know, he's 6'8", you know, 250, 260. Sprinting like a point guard, you're just amazed at, you know, some of those like athletes, like, you know, other than, like, thinking about it with wrestling, have you seen anybody who would just be like, he shouldn't be able to do the things that he does for his size or just the speed he has or his technique? Like, is there any wrestlers like that you came across?
Well, when I first came into WWF,
yeah.
Man, I just come off a tricep injury, and they put me with a guy named Savio Vega, who's mm-hmm. Puerto Rico. And me and Savio got to be real good buddies when I first came in, because I'd been on the sidelines with that elbow, that tricep healing up. I blew up every night, mm-hmm. and I was the heel, he was a baby face. Mm-hmm. So by the time, you know, he got all this stuff in and I started beating him up, I'd lay in a rear chin lock trying to catch my breath.
Yeah.
But he was a guy, Savio's probably 6'1", but he's probably about 250 or 60, but just, he didn't look like an athlete.
Yeah.
But the spinning stuff, the aerial stuff that he could do when he did it,
yeah.
I used to call him the human bumblebee, because he didn't look like he could be able to fly, but somehow he could.
Yeah.
Go, and on the basketball thing, civilians like me will always wonder, because I grew up, man, with Magic Johnson and Larry Bird, those cats, Dr. J. I got a chance to see that. And then all of a sudden, you know, Michael Jordan, all those guys come. After that, and now Kobe, and now the LeBron, your era. So if I had to ask you, as a guy in the NBA, who's the greatest player that ever played the game of basketball?
It'd have to be Michael, definitely Michael, then Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and then I have to go with the guy who drafted me, Larry Bird. You know, those are my top three right there.
That's awesome, top three.
Yeah,
I would agree with you on that.
Yeah.
Hey, you know Kareem just lives right down the street.
He does?
Yeah.
Oh, that's my guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's come to – I've worked out with him a couple times, you know, so yeah.
Yeah, he's when I was in there working with Judy, getting my stuff back together, he was – I think he had it was a foot or whatever. But anyway, he was there getting treatment.
Yeah.
So I got a chance to – I mean, like, we became good buddies, but I got a chance to say hi to him.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see, you know – earlier in the conversation, just talking about the backside of the career, what you're going to feel like.
Yeah.
Guys as tall as you, I mean, with all the physicality, jumping up and down. Here's the thing. A lot of people don't get, you know, whether you're, say this, we're sitting at a square table. It's probably 4 feet by 4 feet.
Yeah.
And so if this was a wrestling ring, man, you just get in there and you start falling down.
Yeah.
All that stuff adds up, man.
Yeah.
The laws of physics, gravity, all that, it applies, and it's like interest. It compounds daily. So if this is a basketball court and you guys are jumping up and landing, or getting elbowed, dude, that's a beating.
It is a beating.
And so it catches up to you.
Yeah.
And so on the backside of the career, you know, it's like I'll talk to some of these younger guys, and, you know, that, and then the guys in their late 30s, and say, all right, man, it's coming. It's probably about 10 years down the road, but it's coming. Do you talk to guys that are the 10 years, the 39, the 49, the 59, the Kareems?
Yeah.
And ask them how they're feeling from all the battles?
Man, they tell me that we have it good. Because
they're all trainers.
Yeah, they're trainers, because they told me, there have been times they tell me they taped their own ankles before the games, or they didn't have trainers. And one of the things that Kareem told me, that he said that it would have prolonged his career a year or two was flights, the charter flights, because he said, I think he stopped playing in like 88, and I think they said Detroit had won back-to-back, and they were the first team in the NBA to get chartered flights. And they basically, if they had a game at 7 o'clock, they stayed the night in that city, and they flew out at 6 a.m. on a regular, you know, flight and this, that, and the other. So, and then sometimes you couldn't get the extra leg room, and you have to go cross-country. That's probably tough. And he told me that that probably would have saved a year or two off of his career, you know. So yeah.
Man, that's what a lot of the top guys in WWE are doing right now. They got the tour buses.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, I wish I'd have thought of that, but I'm so cheap, I probably wouldn't have done it. It's a write-off, but nonetheless, I probably wouldn't have done it. These days when you guys are flying, are y'all flying private or just a commercial that you guys leased or whatever?
Well, I think the NBA has a deal with Delta, and they have a certain number. So we may have a plane that we'll share with four or five different teams. So as soon as Atlanta's dropped us off in Atlanta, it'll take off and go to Miami, pick up that team and go somewhere else. So, but for the most part, it's retrofitted for bigger people and everything like that. Most of the time I'll find like a area put and I'll lay down on the ground, on the floor, you know, on the plane from time to time, just to catch my nap or something like that.
Dude, when you're 7'2" and the world is built to accommodate a human being, the average height is 5'9" or 5'10", yeah. I would imagine.
Yeah.
It might be even shorter. I'm talking about for a guy.
Yeah.
And you're 7'2", the inconvenience is you've lived with him your entire life.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's got to be a pain in the ass sometimes, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, like certain things, like if I fly and try to save money, I fly Southwest. They always, if you get, there's in Southwest is great. Sometimes because the exit row, they don't have a seat in front sometimes.
Yeah.
So you have to get A1, A2, A3 to be able to get that, you know, and sometimes there'll be some carryovers from the same flight they stopped, and then people would, you know, move to that seat and they wouldn't get up, you know, something like that. And then on planes, I took a picture in the plane and a bathroom, and it's cramped. You can't even move, you know, stuff like that. So just little things like that. But for the most part, you know, when I was in college, I dated a girl that was 5'4". It was probably, you know, the most awkward thing. My wife now is 5'10". So, so yeah, people, you get weird looks from time to time, even like little dumb things like, you know, my wife has, two, French bulldogs. They're like little dogs. And we, you know, I would take it outside, and then people are like, "Oh, you're so tall. Why you have a small dog?" So I'm just like, you know, I hear that all the time. You know, so like little annoying.
Why you
got to
do buy some stilts for the dog?
Yeah. So I you know, obviously with the two German shepherds, people don't even come to me and talk to me when I have them out. But it's dumb things like that.
Dude, you always able to catch a nap for the game? I mean, obviously you're still a youngster, 29, chronologically, and you're busy as hell, so I can understand a nap. But I can't sleep during the daytime, so I envy that. So what is it, every day you take about an hour and a half nap?
No, only on game days. It's crazy because it's just when I talk to like these older players, like Larry Bird and Kareem, they say the technology nowadays is so crazy. So when we're in Indy, they had a sleep specialist come in and talk to us. And they said 2 o'clock is the best time of the day to take a nap. They said either 10 to 15 minutes or 90 minutes. No more, no less. And then you'll be energized. And they gave us all the studies and stuff like that. So 2 o'clock, from 2 to 3:30, I take my nap on game day. So I'm up and ready to go.
Let's give it up for GEICO for supporting the Steve Austin Show for all these years. In just 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. GEICO has been offering great rates and great service for over 75 years. And anytime you need help, you can speak to one of their trained specialists 24/7. Go to GEICO.com and start saving cash. Extra money in your pocket, it may just be the most rewarding thing you do today. All right, everybody, give me the go-home cue. It's time to wrap up this podcast and ride off in the sunset. If you want to reach me here on the podcast, send an email to questions@steveaustinshow.com. And a heads up to everybody out there on the East Coast, my IPA, Steve Austin's Broken Skull IPA from El Segundo Brewing Company, is out on the East Coast in Massachusetts, New Jersey, and New York. We've got another shipment headed your way because all of the locations were basically sold out. Check ElSegundoBrewing.com and check the interactive map to find a location that sells it closest to you. Broken Skull IPA is still available in California. We're mostly available at Whole Foods and Total Wines. King of Attitude shirts and Broken Skull shirts over at ProWrestlingTees.com. and got a badass pocket knife, the Broken Skull Knife or the Working Man's Knife. Amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin. I want to say one more thank you to all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show, especially Zorro.com, Geico, and BetOnline.ag. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. Please support them because they support us. And if you need more info on my sponsors, check out the show description to this episode for details. Folks, I am on social media, Twitter and Instagram, at Steve Austin BSR. And if you see me out in the woods, you will see me sitting on a Kawasaki, and that's the bottom line. Until next time, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
Download new episodes of Steve Austin Unleashed every Thursday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.